This is the Education Gadfly Show.
Let's see. Lurchien means dog. I remember that. And pantalon means pants.
What does Gadfly say?
Hello, this is your host, Mike Petrilli of the Thomas B. Fordham Institute, here at the Education Gadfly Show and online at fordhaminstitute.org. And now, please join me in welcoming our special guest for this week, Bill Eggington. Bill, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Mike. It's great to be here.
Bill is a professor of the humanities at Johns Hopkins University. He's the author of a recent book called The Splintering of the American Mind, Identity, Politics, Inequality, and Community on Today's College Campuses. Whew, does that fit on all on the cover? Is that?
Yeah, you have to split it up a couple of times, yeah. But yeah, it fits. Yeah.
And a little more relevant to the discussion we're going to have today, he is the author of a recent piece in the New York Times entitled, Is Computer Code a Foreign Language? No, and High Schools Shouldn't Treat It That Way. Also joining us, please welcome my co-host, David Griffith.
Hey, Mike.
Hello, David.
Good to be here.
All right. So let's talk really about foreign language versus computer coding in Ed Reform Update. All right, Bill. Well, let's start off. You know, there is a lot of enthusiasm for computer coding these days, and some people have made this case that we should allow kids to substitute instead of taking a foreign language, if that's required where they are, they should be allowed to take computer coding instead. You know, our colleague Stephanie Sanford, who's on our board, and she's at the College Board, they have been doing a big push around computer coding with a new AP course that I think is called Computer Science, but I might get that wrong, but that's just going through the roof. Is that right, Andrew? Computer Science Principles, yes, the most popular new AP course perhaps ever. It's just going through the roof. And everywhere you turn, there's people talking about how what we need is for kids to know how to code. This is so basic. So what's your argument for saying no, foreign language is still as important as ever?
Well, the first thing I'd like to insist upon is the argument that I'm making is the second part of what you said and not the first part.
Okay.
In no way should I ever be taken as saying no to computer science.
Okay.
I think computer science is extremely important. It's become one of the most important, not just fields, but methods of training young people for competitive advantage in the marketplace.
Yeah.
And I'm in no way, that I should be saying should be taken as undermining or denying that.
Okay.
My problem is, and it's something that a lot of computer programmers agree with me about, is the assumption that if a requirement is going to be moved to allow for a requirement or to allow it to be replaced with computer programming, why should it be languages? Why should it be foreign languages?
Yeah.
The idea of studying a foreign language, if and when it's a requirement in a school curriculum, actually has very little to do with computer language. The idea, I think, what happens is certain people propose legislation, get stuck on the idea, oh, when you learn to code, that's a kind of language. It's a computer language.
Yeah.
And that this, in some, because of the common word language, mm-hmm. that, well, why wouldn't we make room in the curriculum by replacing something that already has, that
yeah.
is a requirement that's called foreign language.
And so what, that is really more
that
of
I was a, making
that is a metaphor.
That it's not.
It's really a metaphor,
yeah.
right? I mean,
it's a
that,
metaphor.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
why are we taking so seriously a metaphor that we would end up changing school requirements? Now, there may be arguments out there. I wouldn't believe them, and I would argue against them as well,
yeah.
that, well, we in the United States really don't need our children to be learning foreign languages. This is a waste of time. But that's not the argument that's being made. The argument is implicitly being made that, oh, computer languages are something like foreign languages. Hence, why don't we just replace
yeah.
one requirement with the other? And I guess the point of my piece was to take that a little, was to look into the underpinning reasoning behind mm-hmm. Behind that argument and say, you know what? This is actually showing us something about the way that we're treating human beings
mm-hmm.
Today, that we're bit by bit starting to treat each other a little bit more like the way that we interact with machines. And I think this is a problem.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, in fact, intensifying foreign language study as opposed to weakening it is one way among many that we can maybe redress that tendency in society.
So, well said, Bill. But here's the challenge. You know, every day we see somebody out there calling for a new requirement that high schools should tackle. You know, of course, foreign language has been a part of the curriculum for a long time in many high schools and in some states. Mm. But okay, so there's computer coding, there's financial literacy, there's environmental education,
civics,
right?
Yeah.
How many, you
right.
know, we've been arguing here that, you know, half a year of civics isn't nearly enough.
It's not enough.
Right? Plus,
yeah.
there's the basics, you know, 4 years of math, 4 years of English. You know, kids should be taking some career tech stuff on the side. They, You know, so when you add it all up, there's no way you could fit it all in. It would, you know, we'd have to expand high school to 8 years or something like that. So, you know, both for you, David, and for Bill, like, how should we make these decisions? I mean, you know, one argument is, look, states should just stay out of it entirely. You know, that because all we're doing here, we're all trying to make a guess about what kids are going to need when they grow up, whether right. they're going to need it in the labor market or they're going to need it for a good life. They're going to need it as citizens. And we should be humble that maybe nobody's got, you know, a better idea than anybody else about what it's going to take. That would be one extreme. The other extreme would say that, well, we just have to, you know, how else can we adjudicate between these different demands when all of it sounds reasonable? I mean, you know, foreign language, of course, there's an argument for foreign language, but, you know, is it necessarily a stronger argument than these other things?
Yeah. One question I'd put to Bill is, I mean, does foreign language necessarily have to happen in high school, right? Because, like, I mean, high school, it almost seems like something that is better addressed in kindergarten through eighth grade, right? I mean, that's most of the people that I know that really speak something. They spoke it as kids, right? And I have to say, also, I struggle with this with foreign language too, because I don't know, I'm not even sure how many years of Spanish. I'm not sure I speak a word of it now. I think a lot of people have this experience.
Yeah.
I don't think the right answer was 0 years of Spanish. Right. But I'm also, it's kind of hard for me to tell, like, you know, how much is enough. Right.
Right.
I
completely understand the skepticism and where the questions are coming from. And again, with emphasizing that in no way am I suggesting that massive changes across the board at a national level to curricula. Rather, really focusing in on this question, is a computer language so similar to a foreign language that we should simply redo or allow an interpretation to basically override existing legislation, existing school board rules in different states, which I'm against. But obviously behind that lies an opinion that I have about the importance of foreign language learning. And to go back to something that, well, I think both of you were raising this to a certain extent, but definitely you, David. So when is the best time to start learning a foreign language? There's no question that the earlier you start, the more effective it's going to be. So high school requirements in lieu of, or simply piled on top of, a lack of requirements in elementary school is probably not the most effective use of time. So you'd have to go to each, whatever the school board, whether these requirements are parsed out by state level or by municipality or by school boards, and see in each individual case whether requirements make sense. So I would tend to agree that if you had no introduction to level, no to language at any kind of introductory level for the first for the years of, say, kindergarten through five, or even through middle school, and then suddenly had a language requirement in high school, this is not a particularly effective use of curriculum.
Yeah. No.
On the other hand, I would have to go and check all of the requirements, but I doubt many of those.
That's right. Well,
I doubt that would be a very normal progression of courses.
And we certainly, I'll speak for myself. I mean, the elementary school curriculum is so vacuous, you know, and on so many fronts, you say, wow. If we were starting earlier, if we actually taught, you know, we're serious about teaching U.S. history and civics in elementary school, if we actually taught foreign language in elementary school, which I think there's time to do. I mean, it's just a wasteland, has been my experience.
Oh, of course there's time to do it. Yeah. Of course there's time to do it. You know, so you know, as you know, my focus tends to be more on higher education as a professional, but I'm the father of three children who have all made it at this point, as of this year, through lower school, as we call it in Maryland.
Yeah.
So through fifth grade. And yeah, in our school, the kids have foreign language training. Now, I wouldn't say it's the best training in the world, but it prepares them for some kind of a continuation, and then certain choices start to enter the curriculum in middle school. And I think that's probably a good way to do it. I think, you know, going back to the point that you were making, Mike, about essentially, you know, as the world complexifies and we have more and more things to learn, where in the world are we going to put them all in the curriculum? I think that is overall a problem, but it's not a problem that's specific or limited to primary through secondary education. Mm-hmm. It's sort of the problem of the accretion of knowledge overall.
Yeah. Right?
I mean, and at a certain point, it's true that let's take the analogy of the canon. the literary canon, right? As the canon grows, there's obviously going to be new works that are going to be pop up, and people are going to make arguments that it's worth considering adding this to the canon. Mm-hmm. Well, naturally, the canon is a limited, in just in terms of how much time we have to read, right? It's a limited terrain. So what are we going to do about that? Well, we have hopefully informed, hopefully robust discussions. Then from time to time, works fall out and other works fall in, because we do recognize that our time is limited. And I think obviously the same thing has to happen. But if you're talking about simply allowing for the disappearance of an entire field of knowledge, namely learning languages, mm-hmm. I think it's going to need to happen in a little bit less stealthy a way than simply saying, oh, guess what? This and that both have the same word language, and right. Let's let the ones pass for the other.
That's totally fair that we should have this debate out in the open and look at the, you know, all the positives and negatives and go forward rather than pretending that we're not killing it off. All right.
And getting back to that point, yeah. Then what are, and I think, you know, this is, if we were starting to have that conversation, then I would write different articles and be pretty adamant about why some level of foreign language learning from pretty early on is a good idea. Yeah. It's a good idea in terms of cognitive development. Even if people don't go on to become fluent speakers of the language, there has been demonstrable evidence of simple improvement of cognitive ability, yeah. With the introduction of foreign, yep. languages at an early age. Then look at the United States in terms of its overall geopolitical reach. What's been happening in recent years? There's been plenty of people talking about the end of the American century, the end of American influence. It does seem to me that already from the 60s and 70s, there have been calls for more robust learning of foreign languages. And by and large, these have been ignored. And I think we ignore them to our detriment.
All right. Well, great. Well said, Bill. Thank you very much again. Bill Eggington, professor of the humanities at Johns Hopkins University. Check out his New York Times article, "Is Computer Code a Foreign Language? No, and High School Shouldn't Treat It That Way." Bill, thanks so much for coming on the show.
It's a pleasure. It's great to meet you both.
All right. Now it's time for everyone's favorite, Amber's Research Minute. Amber, welcome back to the
show.
Thank
you, Mike.
So, Amber, David and I both admitted that we could not learn any foreign languages despite taking it for years and years.
That's tough, wasn't it? 4 years of French right here.
And how much French do you speak?
Let's see. Lurchien means dog. I remember that. And pantalon means pants.
Oh, my gosh. All of us. It's the same experience.
Terrible.
Let's see, 6 years of French between junior high and high school,
really?
And then 4 semesters of Spanish. And now all I do is I mix the two
when I try to speak either.
But
that's impressive, though.
That's not impressive. I didn't learn it. It's a complete.
I didn't even think you could take that many years of a language. That's something. No, it was fun, though, right? It was fun. I mean, I know.
Yes.
You just don't retain it if you don't use it. That's
well,
just the bottom line.
You know, as we just discussed, if we actually did it when the kids were little, it would work better.
It's a game changer.
All right, what you got for us?
We have a new study by Nat Malkus, our buddy at AEI, that examines the evolution of career and technical education from 1982 to 2013.
Mm-hmm.
So that's quite a span.
Yep.
He examines how CTE course taking has evolved, as well as how the characteristics of the participants have changed.
Mm.
So he uses transcripts of nationally representative samples of U.S. high school graduates from 82 to 2013. Like I said, he uses the High School and Beyond study, which includes high school graduates who were in 10th grade in 1980. And he also uses data from the 1990, 94, 2000, 2005, and 2009 installments of the high school transcript studies,
mm-hmm.
which again samples high school kids, graduates in each respective year. And then he uses this classification system of courses so that all the transcript studies are standardized, all the courses are standardized over mm-hmm. time. And he uses the NAEP math assessment data that were linked to the high school transcript data, as well as math assessment in 2013 from the high school and beyond. He converts all those data into comparable percentile rankings across the different assessments and across time.
Whew.
To capture CTE concentrators' academic achievement relative to their peers.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of work.
Yeah.
Right.
Seriously.
That's a lot of work.
And yet, you know, all these data are just sitting there. right?
Just waiting.
And nobody ever uses it. I mean, I don't know. I mean, this is the complaint, right?
Right.
We spend a fair amount of money at the federal level collecting all this data.
We do.
And then
we do.
Yeah. So this is great. I mean, he probably had to, I wonder if this is like, you had to get in there to get special permission.
I don't know if you've got to have a restricted license or not.
Right.
Not sure how that works.
Yeah.
I know. Four key findings. Number one, over the last three decades, overall CT course taking declined by more than 25%, with the biggest decline stemming from business courses, which makes sense since typing and word processing in the 1980s. Did you take this?
I took typing. Eighth grade. Yes.
Are now more or less integrated across the high school curriculum. The percentage of students with at least one concentration fell by half. So those are students who are taking three or more courses within one occupational area. Number two, across six areas that he terms traditional voc ed, manufacturing, human services, transportation, construction, agriculture, and public service. He saw stability or decline in course taking by about one third in those areas. And then he does this thing where he kind of says, you know, those are more blue collar jobs. That's why he's calling that traditional voc ed. And then these other five fields, engineering, computer science, communications, healthcare, and hospitality, he saw an increase of 238% course taking in those areas. He calls that new era CTE. Because he says those are more associated with the knowledge economy. So there's some subjective sort of, you know, bucketing here.
Hospitality, interesting. Okay.
Right. So that's what I'm saying. It's a subjective bucketing. Yeah. Number three is finding, he looks at the differences between those who concentrate in these traditional versus new era fields. He finds that in every year from 1982 to 2013, concentrators' overall average math scores were below the 50th percentile. This is the traditional guys. But over time, their scores rose from the 42nd to 46th percentile. And then he digs down and says, you know, he looks closer and he says, well, those who are concentrating this traditional stuff, they tended to be more flat at about the 38th percentile. But the new era guys scored measurably higher. And as they increase, these new era concentrators, as they increase from about 9 to 48%, the scores, you know, drove more and more of those overall CT averages. So he's saying, you know, his hypothesis is kind of borne out by his data is that these scores appear to be driving the CTE gains by those who are in these sort of new era fields. And then he looks into some other survey data and he finds that the traditional quote concentrators tend to have lower GPAs and less educated parents than those kids who are concentrating in these quote new era fields. And he concludes that he thinks CTE is bifurcated. And that maybe some of these more positive results, including some studies we've done on CTE, where you see test scores and graduation rates and so on, he thinks, well, maybe it's the result of more academically oriented kids entering the CTE tent and not necessarily lifting the entire program quality up.
Right. Very interesting. Yeah. No, that is a very important point that he's making. And look, as we dig into this, we had a recent study come out looking at course taking versus labor market demand, and you get into these data and you start to see, wow, this is not at all what most people would think of. If you ask somebody on the street, okay, what do you think a kid who does, you know, career tech or call it vo-tech is doing?
Right.
Maybe they picture, well, they're at some special vo-tech high school where they're learning how to learn a trade, a carpentry or electrician, or maybe they're learning to be a nurse or they're, you know,
right.
Very much, you know, some hands-on stuff, some courses. Instead, it appears that mostly what this is that CTE is an elective, right?
Can be.
And so kids are taking, I mean, first of all, the fact that things like typing or business classes were ever considered CTE, that's kind of interesting, right? But that, okay, kids are in high school. They can take one or two electives at a time. You know, it's easy to fit in three CTE courses in that course load, and then they're considered CTE.
Right. It's the definition of concentrators. And you know, Mike, I mean, people in the CTE space get very upset. They just think that this is, you know, we need to be defining it differently. We need to make sure they're sequential. They're in one particular field. And by the way, maybe it doesn't need to be in, you know, manufacturing or, I mean, you know what I mean? They want it to be in certain sectors to legitimately be called CTE.
Right. But it leaves this question then, okay, so let's take some more traditional, like somebody who's doing CTE in one of the trades or in manufacturing or in, let's say, healthcare, getting a nursing kind of track, or, you know, are those kids doing better in terms of graduation, in terms of completing some kind of credential post-secondary, in terms of wages? We don't know.
Right. Well, and this one, you know, at least the survey data that he's looking to shows that there are, you know, a different population of kids that are taking particular courses in particular industries than others.
Yeah.
Which, you know, and ironically in our study, right, we didn't find too much evidence of quote tracking, right? We found that, you know, kids across race, ethnicity were taking, you know, courses in different, all you know, in areas. Stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I don't know. It's hard. I think we're still doing a lot of good research, and it's hard to say anything with any certainty in this field right now.
But at least we're asking the right
questions. We are. We're asking the right questions.
No, I think that's right.
And what happened, I mean, they saw it again. I mean, we still don't see a lot of kids concentrating, period.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know,
that's right.
So if we think that, you know, they really need to be digging in and, you know, in one industry over time, we're not seeing that.
Look, I mean, is it fair to say then, you know, the vast majority of American kids, I mean, it could be what, 95% of kids are basically doing a college prep curriculum. What you might have once upon a time called college prep, you know?
You think we've lifted the...
No, I mean, they're taking English, they're taking math, they're taking, you know, their history and civics and their, you know, foreign language, as we talked about earlier, and maybe they're doing a little CTE on the side. Mm-hmm. But in terms of, like, compared to some other countries where, you know, half the kids by the time they're 16 are doing something that's seriously career-oriented.
Right. And it has the industry involved where it's prepping them in real ways.
We're not doing any of that. I mean, a tiny, tiny slice of kids.
Yes, we're not doing that.
All right. Thank you, Amber.
Yes, indeed.
Interesting stuff. Good work, Nat. That is all the time we've got for this week. Until next week.
I'm Amber Northern.
I'm Mike Petrilli at the Thomas B. Fordham Institute, signing off.
The Education Gadfly Show is a production of the Thomas B. Fordham Institute, located in Washington, D.C. For more information, visit us online at edexcellence.net.